rising. Bugger body, body, get you right. They've been telling the truth and they're setting the vibe. You can get into it too if you like and subscribe. Welcome back. We're back. Hey, friend. Y'all know I'm going to start off with something random every time. I don't even know why y'all act like it's something new. Y'all know I'm going to start off with some random ass. Hey, friends.
What's up?
Hi.
How y'all feeling?
I'm gonna lay down. I wanna go to bed. I took the day off work. It's not it.
I'm legit trying to be like, woo, but I know, like, and I know in the back of what's going on, I'm like, Bo is like, nah. It is not.
I'm like, I am here, okay?
Raymond is here with his pom-poms.
Okay, literally, y'all, this is literally like how would I promise y'all, like in college, this was me, like 6 o'clock in the morning. Hey, welcome to UNCG. Good morning. These kids hated me.
You get cussed out on the quad.
They hated me. I was like, let's do a cheer, UNC. And they're just like, who is this big ass queen up here at 6 in the morning screaming and yelling at us? It was me. It was me. So here I am again. BNQ. Woo, B. Okay, not too much. Well, hi, friends. It's good to see y'all. I know everybody's like kind of like, how you doing, Randy? What's going on with you, boo?
I'm doing good. The last couple days have been cold, but they've been a little bit sunny. So Miles and I made it outside and we did some garden beds and like,
yes.
We bought this house and they already had like a lot of things planted. And when we moved here, it was like fall, like, so we are not necessarily sure what everything is. So it's like hostas popping up every place. It's like everywhere. And we're like, what is going on? Like, what is this stuff? Because some of the stuff we don't actually want. So I'm trying to be an organic girly and actually utilize the things instead of being like, dig them out. That's not the right color. Throw that away. I'm trying to throw them all away. To repurpose and help the environment, but
yes, repurpose. I like that.
It's testing my patience a little bit.
So before we know it, next week, we're gonna see a pile of just thrown out flowers. Is what it's giving.
Yeah, that's what it's giving.
He gonna say it's not going my color scheme. We got to get rid of all of these.
Mm-hmm. You already complained to me about one of them. I'm like, here we go.
Yeah, Bo was like, I'm gonna buy a bouquet and put it on the table. So I was like, oh my god. Oh, it's perfect. Like, that way I won't be getting rid of these flowers. I will be giving them to somebody because she said she wanted a bouquet. And Bo is not that hard for me. So I was like,
right.
Okay, girl, I got these ketchup and mustard tulips.
Oh, my God.
I have sent Bo.
Good burger ass tulips.
I have sent Bo updates on these tulips. Like, I sent her like 6 images.
That's wild. Not first and foremost, mustard and ketchup tulips is wild. But
and I was like, that's the exact color.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Oh my gosh.
In the group chat, it's chaotic.
Yes. Well, speaking of flowers, my partner sent me a bouquet of flowers as well as like a bundt cake, which I've never had the nothing but bundt cakes.
Oh, they're
so good.
I've never had them, but he sent them today because today is what we call our 5-3. So 5 months like being together, but 3 months of like officially being like exclusive. So It's a whole thing for us. That sound Bo's calculating. She's over there calculating. She's like, I don't get it. We met in November, but we didn't become an official couple until January, if that makes sense. So 5 months of like knowing each other and dating
each other.
And then 3 months of like being like, we're officially a couple. Yeah. You know.
Okay,
so it's just it's the way that we celebrate. So he sent me flowers and a bundt cake today. And it just, I was not expecting it because I was like, why is somebody knocking at my door? And it was literally that. And I also did, again, remind him, like, I am not a flower person. So these will, I don't know how long they're going to last. I'm doing my best. I did put the little sprinkle thing in there with the water.
Put some sugar in the water. Yeah, put some sugar in the water, like a cup, like a not a cup of sugar.
Are you trying to say I got sugar in my tank? You trying to say I got sugar in my tank? Oh, because I'm gay. You think I got sugar in my tank? Is that what you're saying? I need to put a little sugar in them. What are you trying to make gay flowers? Is that what we make him gay flowers?
You can also do like Sprite, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Sprite?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Put Sprite. I'm drinking that. Damn. Girl. What the flowers need the Sprite for? See y'all over there waste. Y'all being wasteful. Y'all is being wasteful. Them flowers, being
actually, you says the person who just said you don't do flowers. Now you don't
know. I really don't. I know. Look at me. I'm yelling at y'all.
Got a whole bouquet over there begging for water.
Right.
Thirsty. Okay. Thirsty. I did put a lot of water in it today. But yeah, so that was cool to have today. Today has honestly been like real chill. I ain't done too much today. I honestly have kept it real cute because I was like, it's Monday. And I'm traveling this weekend. So I'm like, nah, we keeping it real cute. So yeah. Okay. Well, everybody seems to be like, we haven't done this like in an actual while. So I'm going to do it. And I think it's awful to do it today because... But what are y'all numbers? What's y'all numbers for today? How about numbers for this week? Let's do for the whole week versus just like the day, because maybe those like are different.
They are. My week was like an 8. And then my day is like a 2.
Okay, so we in like the 6-7-ish range total at that average. Okay, okay.
Yeah, I had an eight week. Today has just been slow. So I'm not gonna, I don't know, maybe a 5. Like it's just been a very slow.
I get that.
Drawn out day.
I feel that. I think I'm along with y'all on the 8 because this week was full of like, so as I told y'all, I think y'all probably know, of course, that I'm like looking to move. So I'm trying to find like a new apartment. I've been on this whole journey of like trying to own a house, but it's going to take a little bit longer. So I'm back into like trying to find the renting space. And that is another job, basically. It's legit like a second job to like do that. And the fact that like the time frame that I'm trying to move is also like not like immediate. So it's like, oh girl. So that's been interesting. And y'all, I almost got scammed like 3 times. So it's a gag with the folks on like the Facebook marketplace. Don't trust that. They're cool. Don't do it. But I think overall, the week I would say is probably about an 8. The weekend was good. Got to see some shows, support some friends. It sounds like we all in the 8, you know, and 8 means, you know, new beginnings. Okay. That means something's on the horizon. That's what it's given. Something's on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Raymond.
What? I just feel like that's, y'all don't want to take it. Fine. Okay, fine.
No, I'll take it. Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Next week, be like, see, you was lying. You ain't got nothing going on.
Right.
Okay. Well, I like that we're all in our 8 mode. So as you all know, this is Black Inquiry. I'm Raymond Wise.
I'm Bo the Batty.
And I'm Randy Nigel.
And welcome to the group chat.
From the queer Harlem Renaissance to the early 90s birthing of ballroom culture, queer culture has and continues to shape and embrace an ever-growing community. The fashion, the music, and the catchy vernacular have understandably been adapted into pop culture across the world. With admiration and popularity of any culture, there is always the risk of appropriation. In Black queer culture, this can sometimes create pressure or a desire to assimilate to one specific image or caricature. In an intersectional identifying community, such as the Black queer community, the feelings around queer culture being so mainstream are complex. Appropriation is inevitable, so when does it become too much? Are we allowed to feel some type of way? What role does assimilation play in appropriation, and what if we don't all agree? This week's episode is Anaoop, the Appropriation and Assimilation of Queer Culture. Let's talk about it.
Okay. I think it is important that we start this episode with like breaking down, I guess, the difference of appropriation versus assimilation. So a way that makes it easy for me to understand for the viewers out there is that it's all about power dynamics. So appropriation is when a more powerful group is taking from a lesser powerful group and then using it for their own like benefit. And then assimilation is when a less powerful group is adjusting themselves in order to fit into a larger group better. Mm-hmm. Right? Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
I think that's the simplest way to explain it.
Of course, there's like pieces and elements that go with all of those that can like, you know, kind of micro, you know, micro kind of segment it. But yeah, and I think that's an overall like kind of, I think that's a good understanding. Like take, yeah, I agree. I'm good with that definition.
Okay.
For sure. So I guess, yeah. So even kind of going to that, like, where do you, I guess, where is the line drawn between, you know what I'm saying? Because I think sometimes to your point, like even having to define it, like people often will kind of misunderstand the difference between the two and actually will use as a counterattack for somebody. Like say, for instance, if you say something to somebody about appropriation, they'll counteract it with a like trope to like assimilation.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. So definitely with Black women, this is like my, the main one that gets on my nerves.
Yes.
Black women will talk about the appropriation of Black culture, which is non-Black people deciding to use box braids or like hairstyles that can naturally be found on Black hair and profiting off of them. Like when they did that fashion show in New York and it was all of those white people with locks and braids. I will post the picture.
Mess.
And they got rave reviews. It was like, wow, this is riveting. This is innovative. Yeah. But then assimilation would be Black women's hair being criminalized and being punished. Mm-hmm. So Black women feeling a need to straighten their hair or manipulate it in some way in order to be more acceptable in society.
Right.
So a lot of people will counter when Black people bring up appropriation and they will say, well, y'all are wearing honey blonde wigs and doing this. And it's like, they are a less powerful group having to assimilate into a more dominant group, which the dominant group in this sense will be whiteness. So we have to like understand what is at play. And it's like you being a non-Black person putting in a hairstyle that is natural to Black hair or Black culture is not you assimilating into anything. You are the dominant group or a more dominant group, and you're using this to self-enrich.
Right. Yeah. And we see it so much, especially in like the queer community. Ugh. And like it's gotten even worse now. Like one, I think we've said this before, but I hate the fact of like people being like, oh yeah, like Hoochie Daddy shorts. And I'm like, girl, like I've been wearing like small shorts and stuff like that for a long time. I think it's and I mean that's really simple, right? Like that's not exactly appropriation, but there is an essence of it that comes from that to where it's like now people are being celebrated for doing things that we would be doing and be ostracized for it, right? Like as a queer man, like where, like I've even like thinking about like the skinny jeans and all that, which would like, listen, the way that I got ostracized for wearing skinny jeans, but then like all of a sudden like rappers can wear it and it's like, oh yeah, he a thug, he cool. And I'm just like, well, when I wore it, wait a minute.
What year was this?
Oh wait, let's not age us now. let's not. Okay.
Depending on when you was wearing the skinny jeans, yeah, girl, yeah. Mm-mm.
not Bo the Bully.
Bo the Bully.
I'm just saying, like, 2024. Why are we still wearing these skinny jeans?
That one has taken me out. Bo the Bully is now my favorite. By the way, that's hilarious. No, I mean, obviously, like this was like in high school and stuff. But I do think that a lot of times, like, we think about how much like queer people and queer culture has influenced like fashion, things like fashion and makeup and hairstyles and things like that. Not to say that they get all the credit, but they have definitely, there's definitely been influence. And even when you see like men now who are like, even, I don't know. Furthermore, most of the stylists that are out there, or like for real, like some of the great good stylists, a lot of them are queer. So it's like they are putting their stamp and their brand on these people's images, and these people are getting praised, by the way, for looking great and looking amazing. And some of them do give accolades to their people, but oftentimes they don't. Like they'll talk about the brand or the company, you know, the maker of the office, but they don't talk about the person that actually styled them and put the pieces together to make it look like them, to make them look like royalty. So I always find that interesting too. But it's always like, I don't know. I feel like there's always this space of where when we do it as queer people, it's almost shunned, but let somebody else that's not a part of the culture or not a part of that community do it. And it's like revolutionary. And that just blows me.
Yeah.
I definitely think, like, when you said the hair thing, it immediately got me thinking to various different, like, artists or, like, makeup artists and stylists that work behind people that we kind of...
Yeah.
Like, people who work behind artists who don't necessarily advocate for them. And the first one I think of big is Tay. Tay does so many people's hair. And a lot of the artists that he works with don't necessarily advocate for people like him being able to show up.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, wow, he is, like Nicki calls him by name in things. Like, Tay didn't think Bob Marley. She just said that in the Barbie song. And you will be hard-pressed to find clips of her advocating for, like, people who exist in the same category that he does. So I think we need to start to, like, look at that in an appropriative category, because it's like you're using these people, you're extracting something from them, but then when it comes time for you to advocate, you're micro-silent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost, I mean, it's very reminiscent of, like, you know, obviously, like, growing up in the church, very similar to that, where it's like, you want to utilize it for my services. You're okay for me to be able to sing all these songs and get these choirs together and get these singers together and make the music sound amazing and people enjoy it. But you don't want me, you don't want to acknowledge and let me live in my truth, right? And that's not okay. But you as a overall community, or as an overall organization, are still profiting and benefiting from what I've contributed to create this culture and create this brand and create this image. So yeah, it's just, it's very interesting that that's like a, I don't know. And it's even interesting thinking about, like, vernacular, right? Where, like, now you're hearing straight guys or heterosexual guys say stuff like, yeah, slay. Like, they jokingly, but, like, it's so part of culture now. Or they be like, shade. Like, listen.
I got red for filth.
Listen. Yeah. And, like, so hearing it is sometimes, like, jarring, because I'm like, because then in my head I'm like, you fam? And then I be like, wait, what? I'm like, it's so commercial now. It is so commercial.
Well, and on that commercial note, I know we were talking about it yesterday when we were talking about this topic. Yep. You also get into, like, people expect that. So, like, if you say that you're gay, they are expecting the yes queen. Come up in here. I'm going to read you down, like,
Lord.
Insert Lord. Whatever vernacular is trending on TikTok. And it's like, if you don't, then they kind of, like, like, well, aren't you gay?
Like, right.
Well, they expect it from you, or you're not gay enough, or it's like, oh, I didn't know you were gay. Like, you don't sound gay. You don't do gay. And it's just because of what one particular representation of queer culture that you're seeing on TV. Like, now you expect everyone to fall into that category. Right. It's like, no. And then, like, we were talking about people, like, choosing when to lean into it to benefit them because they know it's expected of them.
Exactly.
So it's like, well, let me gay it up because I know this is what they want, and absolutely, I need to get this bag.
It's very, like, I said this yesterday, but I'll say it again. Like, it's the Yas queen. Is there a limit to the Yas? Because sometimes I'd be like, nah, girl. Like, all right. Like, because sometimes it becomes very, it just becomes a joke almost, right? Like, to where it's like, it doesn't even seem
like every beauty shop movie, I will say this every time it comes up, in every beauty shop movie, there is like a yes queener, like, gay man, every single one.
Oh my God, can we talk
about it? Blows me.
So, I don't know if y'all have caught up yet. And I love this show, which is why I'm like, how did we get here? Like, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
So Abbott Elementary, there was a character who, one of the teachers is gay. I cannot remember his name.
Right.
The white one, Jacob.
Jacob.
Jacob's boyfriend, Zach, was a bit of a, you know, a queen when it came to, like, reading down. Love Zach's character. That was really fun. Well, these past couple of episodes, there has been another character who works at the district, and he's gay and also, but it's like the exact same type of gay that Zach does. Did you notice that?
Oh my gosh,
like,
Bo,
very much
I
like,
didn't
oh,
even.
Janine, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yes, girl. No, honey, what you need to do?
You know
we love this.
You know what's crazy? You know what's crazy is I didn't think they were the same person, but I was like, wait, is that? I was like, did Jacob's boyfriend, like, transition to another? Like, that's literally what I was.
I did too. So let me like, Google to make sure. Something? Hang on.
I was like, I'm confused here. So
it was
so,
very, and I was,
it was
like,
very,
why?
Very similar. And it was interesting because it was that very like kind of like, yeah, it, ugh,
yeah,
yes. Yeah, and I just, I don't know, I just, but to your point, going back to like saying, like there are times where like we turn it on, and it's interesting because it makes me think of like when we, and as we all are like, you know, thespians and we've all performed, but it makes me think of like going into an audition room and they'd be like, hey, can you like black it up? It is very that, like, can you make it more black? And it's very similar where you're going to certain space and they're like, can you like be more like gay? And it's like, I'm sorry, like what is more gay than me just being myself? You know what I'm saying? And don't get me wrong, I've been in places where I've realized that I was there kind of for that satisfaction, because I've been in places where I feel like they invited me because of, they know my kind of personality and that I am that, you know, I can be the yes queen. Don't get me wrong. I can be what I want to be. But also I'm like really mindful of that in different spaces. But I've been to events where it's like, if I didn't give the yas queen, like it was looked at like, is Raymond okay? Like, is he sick? And it's like, girl, I'm tired. Leave me the hell alone. Like, yeah. Also, I just want to chill. Like, maybe I don't want to do all that today. But it's just very like, yeah, it's very, very, very interesting, like how that's kind of, but even with that being said, like it's been so, everything is so commercialized to where like even you hear like people that you won't expect to hear say, or they'll come up and talk to you and be like, oh yeah, like yes, queen. And like sometimes I'll just be like, please get out of my face.
Girl.
Get out of my face.
That's like, interesting. I would definitely put that in the assimilation category though. Like I would see that as like having to adopt in order to survive or thrive.
Interesting.
Like, in a space. And I think sometimes queer people do have to do that. I think the juk and jive routine that sometimes people have to do is an adoption, not necessarily an adaption. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, but it exists because of the appropriation. Like the appropriation costs go so mainstream, and to be able to earn a profit from, and it's seen as a standard.
Yeah,
so
you have to kind of perform it.
It's performative,
right.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting though? But I also, you know what though? But I also thought about, well, I guess no, that would be appropriation because I think about the people that come into that are like, that are not queer, that come into queer spaces, and how they sometimes will over exaggerate like some of the nuances of like queerdom to kind of feel safe. I don't think I would call that assimilation because we by no means are the greater, are the majority.
No.
But I also think that that's interesting too. Like when people feel like they feel like in those spaces, they have to then do that to feel like embraced in the environment. I also find that really interesting too.
But it also is a benefit that you have when you can go into like,
and back and forth.
When you can take it on and off, or when you can go in spaces and by virtue of you switched up how you're speaking, you can disarm rooms because like black people and I would say queer people who show up, definitely femmes. Show up in a way where they cannot disarm places. Like me, by virtue of the fact that I'm effeminate and dark skinned, will like threaten spaces independent of if I'm doing anything or not.
I don't know, because I feel like sometimes depending on the environment, being black and femme in an environment actually does disarm people. I've been in environments to where my presence as a black queer man has disarmed other people because and I don't know if it's a positive thing, to be honest. I don't know if it's because it's like, oh, he's less of a threat. Or if it's like...
Well, yeah. I see. It depends on like... Context is like really important here, right? Because...
Right, of course.
Me and my friend Rashad have this conversation sometimes. Like we'll go out to the club or something and he'll see someone like who looks really good. But like, you know, for women sometimes between being catcalled and men just being men in general, it's like... Please don't holler out things at me from across the street like that. I don't want to deal with that. But if it's a gay man who is, you know, effeminate and he's like, oh, girl, like you got that shit on, then like it's going to hype us up. And like we are not going to feel as threatened because there is like familiarity and like trust in that, you know, whether it be warranted or not, but there is a sort of like trust in that effeminate presentation because it's like, okay, I know you likely are not about to, you know, attack me or threaten me or X, Y, and Z if I don't do whatever.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And I will say another interesting thing about this is when we did the gay wage gap video, in the research idea for that, they were saying that gay men are seen by a lot of people as more suitable for management positions because they make women feel comfortable. They're seen as more bubbly. They're seen as... So I think also there is something in the way that we are perceived as...
No, that's problematic.
As,
I've had some terrible gay managers. I've been like, bitch, get out of the community, actually. You are...
You're out of it.
You're out of it.
But I definitely do think there is something in that for like how we are perceived that allows us to negate harm. But I don't know if it's a positive thing, but I think being seen as like weak, but also being put in positions of power is like just easy for other people to take advantage of you. You know what I mean?
Agreed. And that's why like, I was saying
you're a marginalized person who is like weak, small in stature and effeminate. If we wanted to remove you from the seat, we can. And I think that's kind of how a lot of queer people get perceived and why we get sometimes pushed up so quickly.
Yeah. And that's why I was saying, like, I don't always know that when I'm going into some of these spaces that even though it's, even though I might be disarming to them, I don't know if it's because of there being this, like, actual genuine trust or if it's, like, synonymous with being, like, weaker or less intimidating or less...
Or both.
Less able. Yeah. It very well could be all that. But I also think it's interesting that you say that about the whole like weak part too, because even thinking about like, I think about Bayard Rustin, right? Like to where he was not given given the platform to be able to be like in his authentic self. But obviously he had the ability and was able to orchestrate this amazing thing and people benefit from it. But there was still this fear of like him being seen or being known or being the person behind it, right? And it's just like, I don't know. And I do think that even watching the documentary about it or watching the movie that just recently came out, it did seem like there was aspects of where they were like expecting him to be weak and expecting him to back down. And I thought that was really interesting to see because he obviously did the exact opposite and fought back. But I think that it's interesting that we're perceived to be that. And that's like, kind of like a narrative that's like within, especially with Black gay men for sure. It's just that narrative of like weak and not strong, less of a man, less of all, you know, all these less of things, which is always like, that's not how we actually rolling though.
Yeah. And I think this is kind of where we start to slip into co-opting. Because if you can find like a weaker group and take something from them, then you can claim credit for it. And we kind of see this happening with so many different like movements and things.
Yeah.
Like we see it with Hidden Figures and how those women went so long with being undercredited. And it's because they are Black women and they did not have a majority group that they belonged to that they could like use the power of to like elevate their platforms. They didn't have that. So it's easy to like kind of overwrite them in history. It's easy to plagiarize their work. And we see the same thing with like the dialogue around Harry Styles. Harry Styles gets to maneuver in the world a certain type of way based on being straight and white. The perception of him being straight and white allows him to maneuver queerness in a different way than I'm going to be able to. If I go and put on a dress and like dance around in the street, nobody's going to take a picture of that shit and be like, "Oh, let's put this on Vogue." But if Harry Styles does it, he can play in respectability a little bit different because he is seen as a part of a majority group and that's not an identity I can opt into.
Right. Which is interesting. Also, this is way, and I apologize because this is way off, but I saw something today that made me concerned. Have y'all seen this video with like Lil Uzi Vert? Is that his name? Lil Uzi Vert?
Voguing at Coachella?
Yes, but he had like the purse. He had the purse, the crop top. What is happening?
Well, and this is not anything, I will say, this is not anything new for him.
He's given metrosexual.
I was gonna say, I don't believe that he is, I don't believe he is cishet. I think he may be somewhere on
the queer
some
spectrum.
Type of queer. Just based off the track record. Now, he still be talking to that girl crazy on live, talking about You know, if I say you're going to do X, Y, and Z, you're going to do it right now. Shut the fuck up. So, like, he's still trash nigga for how he, you know, seemingly navigates these relationships. And maybe if he could figure out, you know, the queer part of things, some other things would click and he would have some fucking respect for women in his life. But... yeah, I give him grace on the voguing things. I'm kind of like, okay, well, you likely are not necessarily...
But it's just interesting because even thinking about like the voguing aspect, like now seeing so how many people are like including some of those aspects into things is also interesting. Like even like it was interesting because, and I don't necessarily think that they're, I don't know, I was thinking about like the Wiz when they did the live, then they did the live Wiz. Recording.
Mm-hmm.
The Wiz, we're going back to New Year's.
when they did the Emerald City Vogue down.
The Emerald City with the Vogue, which made perfect sense, but it's also just like, was it intentional because they felt like that was the best, you know what I'm saying? It's like there's this question of always like, I don't know, maybe it's me, resides this looming question of like, is it intentional for the right reasons, right? Or is it like, we know that this will spark interest, this will spark conversation, right? It's that kind of thing. But yeah, the little Uzi thing that just kind of took me off because I was like, what is happening? Because I was really confused. I don't follow him like that, so I don't really know like what was going on. It was just like strange to see it on my timeline. But that it kind of goes back to what you were saying about like you know, like of course some of these people can kind of go in and out of these spaces and they leave unscathed. But like we walk in it in our fullness and our honesty and our truth, and like we're ridiculed and ostracized for it. So it's just, you know.
Mm. And I think the reason why appropriation requires a larger group is because you have the ability to like co-opt movements. You have the ability to like change the way we perceive things. I think one of the biggest examples that I can think of in Black culture would be Martin Luther King. I think like in the culture, and y'all feel free to fact check me, but I think we sometimes forget that like Martin Luther King was planned to be co-opted. The I Have a Dream speech is done at like a summit where there are like 14 other people speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Luther King, however, was the only Black person there hired by the president to go there and speak on peace, when that's not what the event was. Like the event was radical Black commentators. And they were there to like kind of have discourse about, hey, we need to get this thing started. We need to like have a revolution. That's the type of event it was. The I Have a Dream speech is only as big as it is because it is the only speech of those 14 speeches that could be used to push a narrative.
I could see. I mean, yes. I mean, but wasn't he like the narrative pusher? Like not, yeah, like no shade. Like he's like very much like there are some people who... their whole brand, if you will, or identity is surrounded around pushing a movement or a narrative. Or I think in his case, obviously, it was a positive because of what he was speaking about. But they ain't really making Martin Luther King's like that no more. Like we like
true.
Like we don't really have someone that we can say is necessarily being pushed out to give this narrative like... Now it kind of seems like a free-for-all. Like, we may have, like, a Billy Porter or a RuPaul. Like, the people who are speaking and, like, they're kind of, like, self-tapping themselves. Like, I don't see who we as a collective are, like, selecting to be like, okay, let's put this person out and let them
but
speak for.
But I also
for.
Think the danger of it, like, the interesting thing, and I've been doing so much research on this, so I'm like, this topic is, like, I'm ready. But I think the crazy... interesting thing about it is that, like, his speech has become more prolific because people see it and they're like, oh, with soundbite culture and all of these other things, it can be used by so many different people. Whereas a lot of the other people who spoke along with him, their speeches are not so easily translatable. Like, a Republican candidate cannot get on here and use some of the other people's talking points. But Martin Luther King's talking points, you can kind of skew a little bit and make it seem like it is something that it's not. We've got Amy Schumer using it. We've got Trump using it. We've got a lot of people kind of miswording and co-opting the words of Martin Luther King. And those other speeches will never reach the same popularity because people can't do it. It's not as easy.
Well, I feel like that was the... and I think that might have been intentional because especially given the time that he was speaking, right? It's like, okay, well, you don't want to say something that will blatantly isolate people or blatantly make them feel like they can't connect to. So it's like, say the things, but say it just vague enough to where both sides can kind of maybe find something here for them in the middle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And another thing that I thought was very interesting, like that I am obsessed with the study of Martin Luther King. I'm sorry, y'all. But Martin Luther King had a protege that like so rarely ever gets brought up because he was being paid. Like he was being paid by white people to push particular things. And Malcolm X called this out. He basically said, hey, both of y'all are doing this and this and this, and you are being tools for the white man's agenda. Like your movement is being co-opted. And Martin Luther King ended up letting go of his protege. And he denounced the protege, which you can look up. And then later, he says, you know what? I regret a lot of the things that I said. Like, I realize now, Martin Luther King, at the end of his life, I will find a snippet and post it on our social media. At the end of his life, he says, I regret now the fact that I gave this speech and I understand that it can be used. And then he was subsequently murdered immediately following.
I mean, yes.
Crazy.
FBI killed Fred Hampton. Like
that's so wild to me. His story is so interesting. And his movie does not depict the, like,
of course,
like
not.
Of course not. Now, girl, did you expect it to? What did you
Girl, they in here teaching Black history, talking about slavery. They not even teach about slavery no more.
Right.
They said,
like,
they
what
said,
do you mean?
No, nothing happened. Nothing happened in the 1600s. No, we're now just all happy and black and white all together. Everybody's happy. And it's like, girl, boo. So no, they would not tell that story about Martin Luther King. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
But I also see I feel like we see this a lot. I know the other day, was it you, Raymond, who brought up B. Scott?
Yes. Oh my gosh. The B. Scott thing. Okay. So if you all remember, I think this was back in 2013. Oh God, I got to remember. I remember the date.
It was 11 years ago. I got you.
Yes. Out. I think it was, I was like, it has to be 2013. But it was the BET Awards. So on the first, so B. Scott, who is a known like, interviewer, like just a personality, which is honestly really, really great personality and just a great person in general. But basically they were on the red carpet for BET Awards, which this was like very progressive. Like BET was letting B. Scott, who was in an open, like who was a, you know, very public figure as far as like being trans and in the queer community. And so they were doing like red carpet interviews. So you see like the first couple of interviews or the first like half of like the red carpet, B. Scott is in this like gown and like hair is like straightened like down and beautiful and just luscious and look great.
Yes.
And then you go into like maybe 20 minutes later or like the next segment where like get back to like B. Scott and now B. Scott is in like a full on like suit and like hair is pulled back, like very, very more, if you will, more masculine presenting. Which is just, so B. Scott actually ended up suing BET because of that, because basically they were like using the hype and using the platform in which B. Scott has and the audience who follows B. Scott in order to get that audience to watch the show to be even, you know, be even more involved, but then wanted to like police like how they were presenting. So it's just like stuff like that blows me. It's like, it's again, using for profit is that kind of thing. And it's just crazy.
They did that too. I know, Randy, you had brought up when they BET Awards had Pose on.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and they had this great grand opening, like the girls were voguing down, and yet voguing no out. One that was there.
And didn't get nominated. I was like, the fact that Pose doesn't have a BET Award when it is like one of the most prolific things that we have seen, like, period, like black shows that focus, that center queerness, like, it is one of the most prolific, period. Hard stop.
And I wonder if they did that because of Ryan Murphy. Like, I wonder if BET felt some type of way since Ryan Murphy was behind the creation of Pose.
But Sam Smith has a BET award.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Sam Smith got Best New Artist in 2015.
Ooh.
Please fact
so
check
cringe.
Me.
I'm pretty sure Justin Timberlake probably does.
Justin Timberlake definitely does. I'm almost certain that Justin Timberlake has one.
So it's just Eminem, y'all got to do better. I will say, I'll give BET some credit. Allegedly, they are trying to reform and change their ways because after they hired on Lena Waithe, she then went back and hired B. Scott. And B. Scott ended up being the first black trans woman to, I want to say, either write or produce a show with BET.
Yes.
So they did rectify it a little bit down the line. But I did think that original story is ratchet. The fact that they asked her to show up and then she showed up in all of her whole self.
Yeah.
And then they pulled her from the carpet. And then, and this is why I say we need to have an episode on allyship too.
Oh, it was 20s. Shut up.
What?
Who?
20s gets after show with B. Scott. 20s is the show that Lena Waithe does, and I guess she brought in B. Scott.
Oh, right,
I love
right,
that.
Right.
Yes, okay. Come on, fact check me.
Yes.
Ah, I love when I get fact checked and I'll be right.
20s is lit. I love that for them.
But,
I derailed you. I'm so sorry. That was my fault. That was me. My bad. That was all me. I'll take the ball for that.
You were
wait. You were talking about B. Scott showing up.
Oh, I was just gonna say we need to talk about allyship. Now I'm back.
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
Sorry, y'all. I needed a brain moment. But I think we need to talk about allyship because they pulled B. Scott off of the carpet and Adrian Bailon, who was walking the carpet. They then told, hey, girl, we need you to host the show. Mind you, she was not there in a host capacity at all.
Right.
They pulled her from the carpet as like a person there attending the event to work a job. And then they had B. Scott work alongside her.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
so baffling and wild. I was like, I wish Adrian Bailon in that moment would have said, no, I'm not doing that. That's inappropriate. But I get it. Maybe she didn't know the full set of circumstances. But
maybe she
I'm watching
know,
you, Adrian.
Also, could have been the chance that they were like, "If you don't do it, then we just won't have B. Scott at all."
Also,
like,
I
bet like it's this way or no way, right?
Right.
That's so bad.
It's trash, though. It is trash. Like
it's absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just wish on the BET moment just a little bit more. I wish that BET would center black people. I see BET as like, well, I think it's supposed to be our Oscars. To me, it should center like all of the black people who are making strides in music. It is crazy that we have like white artists who have like best new artists and then there are some like black people who never got it. I think if you cannot find a black artist that you feel like is worthy of this, we need to start looking on the YouTubes and in the trenches for up and coming people and then highlight them. The fact that Sam Smith has beat the award is wild to me.
It is.
Yeah. And I'm very curious about like who.
And for what? For what song? Like just an album?
I believe he has Best New Artist.
Why?
They,
my bad. I don't follow them.
Thank you.
Sam Smith, BET Awards. Child, look, I gotta know. Best New Artist in 2015.
Oh, come on, I was right. Really? But
what? Did they accept it, though?
I hope not.
Sam Smith didn't accept BET Award.
Good.
Because they're white and didn't think they'd win.
What? Okay, wait.
Oh, they didn't show up. Okay, so they didn't take it seriously. It's like they didn't go to the show, like to the award ceremony, because they were like, well, I'm white. Like, okay, I'm not going to win. And then...
I
love that.
That just... Okay. Yep. Yeah, I'm going to leave all my thoughts about
that. I need
to
see who was nominated, because that's the thing. Like,
yeah, because it's like...
Also, I need to know the process, because as far as I thought, songs are submitted to like the Academy on other award shows, and then they are voted on, but there's a submission process. Are we saying that BET doesn't, or at this time, did not have one of those?
Would we be surprised if they didn't?
I don't,
girl,
see, I don't,
it is BET.
But you know, I was about to say, because even when we think about, the BET Awards, even though it's on BET, I was thinking about this now, just thinking about like the fact that like Pose, because Pose wasn't a BET show, right? So I don't know if when
FX.
They're... Right. So I don't know if like the whole point of BET, to me, I feel like a lot of it is more to promote whatever they have going on their platform versus it being where it's like recognizing all black talent. But to your point, if they had the whole cast from Pose come out there, why was they there? If
Billy Porter did TV, some orchestrated some performance and like what? Highlighted them. And it's just like,
yeah.
It just,
y'all.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense. So
and
I just,
if you're going to celebrate just the network, that's fine.
Interesting.
Right.
Wait, what'd
okay.
you find, Bo?
What'd you find, Bo?
So the nominations for Best New Artist in 2015 were Sam Smith, mm-hmm. Bobby Shmurda. I don't know how to say this artist. Dej Loaf. D-E-J Loaf.
I thought it was DJ Loaf. DJ Loaf?
Why is there an E in DJ?
I'm almost certain that it's DJ Loaf.
Okay, girl. Well, DJ Loaf. Fetty Wap. Ray Shmurd. S-R-E-M-M-U-R-D. And Tinashe.
Oh.
Okay.
What?
Well,
I don't even know half of them people that y'all just legit.
I mean, I think Bobby Shmurda, I get why he was nominated, but I'm like, for as far as best new artist, like, let's be. I mean, and he would have been if had he not gotten caught up. But Tinashe is right there.
And Sam Smith
is right there. Fetty Wap, like, owned that summer.
Why
you could give it to Fetty?
Why was Sam Smith even put in that category?
That is whole.
Well, because you have to understand that when Sam did come out, like that very soulful voice, like
sure.
very, like,
but
and
see,
they
wait,
did
kind of
just sweep.
Hold on. See now, when we say soulful, right?
I mean, white people sometimes sing like they are fucking unseasoned and it's like chicken breast with nothing on it. So the second that a white person does have some type of flavoring or technique
okay.
or able to control or belt, an actual belt that's not hollering.
Oh, okay. Bo feels really some kind of way about this. No, and the reason
I
say
like
that
Adele
is...
Adele too, like they get like a lot of like...
Yeah. Well, and I think because you know what I mean? because they don't have the typical sound that has been kind of
yes associated
like
with
celebrated
the
right
them,
exactly
especially
exactly
in pop.
Exactly, and I agree with that, and I think that's where and I find that interesting because I feel like this is now to go back to Beyonce. This is what's going to be country. I mean, this is what's going to be interesting is when we see things like MTV. And like all those places, let's see if they're going to give her the accolades like apparently BET did for Sam Smith for Sound and Soulful. I want to see if those things are going to. I'm curious.
BET
about that now.
Probably would, but she may not. She I mean, when
yeah.
the last time Beyonce been?
Oh
to
no,
a
she's
BET
not. Yeah,
she's not.
Yeah, but yeah, I just. Yeah, I don't. I still don't understand why he was part of that category. Like, and again, if we're talking about black entertainment.
Television, period.
I mean, I just guess like one of the requirements would be to
black.
To be black. I don't know.
But
I don't
think
know.
That was when, I feel like BET also, was that when Deborah took over? I feel like they
yeah.
maybe
they were trying to make it more
so
mainstream.
Right. Trying yeah. to be like, oh, we are, I think.
They wasn't making no money.
This goes back to that like assimilation thing. Like maybe in order to appeal and to like
right.
show
to a broader
that
audience.
Are, right. A broader audience. It's like, okay, well,
yeah.
let's say, you know, we're the BET Awards, but we honor everyone who has contributed and not just black
which,
people. And it's like.
Which is yeah, still, well, I still have I have questions about that. But
no one's
also,
coming to BET for this.
I mean, like I said, all I really watched BET for was Bobby Jones Gospel. So I don't understand like anything else that's happening on there right now. I'm not going to lie to y'all. Oh, I do watch all the Queen's Men because wow. Wow.
Is that Tyler Perry? It feels like it's Tyler
it
Perry.
It is Tyler Perry, but Eva and all them fine men. Yes, I do. Mm. I do watch mm-hmm. I do watch the BET for that. Cause they okay, we supposed to be talking about everything. Look at me. Look at us. Look at us. We done went down a rabbit.
I mean, Tyler Perry doesn't assimilate because those wigs are still awful.
Oh,
so clearly.
Let me tell you, what was I? Oh, right. When I was watching, what was I watching the other day?
For Color Girls.
Every wig. every yeah. wig. Every yeah. wig. I said, y'all ain't nobody have no hairspray to pin it. There was no, mm-hmm. no, there was nobody pin rolled it. Nobody.
Mm-hmm. No.
When I tell y'all that
no.
Every wig. Every wig. Oh my God. Mm. And I was like, Lord, okay, let me, okay, we gotta go back.
Every wig shall lay. Stupid.
Ooh, my God. My God on today. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to try to save us and reroute.
But do we think, wait, back to this BET though. This is like on topic and not, but back to the BET
yeah.
thing. Do we think that this is their version of them trying to invite people into the culture? Like going like based off who gets a pass and who it's like who's is invited appropriation to the if you're invited.
Who's invited to the cookout, basically.
I don't believe in and see, I don't believe in inviting people to cookout, but I know I don't. We don't. Why do we have these like black spaces that are to celebrate blackness and then we feel the need to invite an oppressor? Even if they aren't individually like so, but like black spaces can like are sacred and are necessity for like a necessity for our culture. Like it's for us to show up in our space, celebrate each other, love on each other. And like, I don't understand why in a black space, such as the hypothetical cookout, why we need a white person there. Like what can they add in that moment to me loving on you as like black person to black person.
Yeah. And I think going back to like the whole like invitation versus, and that kind of is along the lines of like appropriation, right? Where there's like an invitation versus you just kind of doing it on your own accord. And I do think that there are levels to that, right? And I think we actually talked about this a little bit, Randy, we actually talked about this yesterday about like, you know, I've been like working on the cruises, right? And so when I go to the cruises and we go to all these different islands and like, you know, the women of the island will like braid people's hair and do that. And for the long time, seeing women, like seeing like, you know, non-black women or non-minority women go and get their hair braided and come back to the ship and be like, ooh, my hair look like your, you know, that kind of thing. That
not look like yours.
Listen. They go, do you like my hair? And I'm just sitting there like, because I work here and I don't want to get fired, I'm just gonna walk away. Because no, I don't like these braids and these beads that they done put on the bottom of your hair. No, because they about to fall off. Like what are we doing here? So no, I didn't enjoy that. And I think again, I guess that goes to the question is like if they were invited, right? Because these people are doing it for a profit, right? The people that are doing the braiding, they're doing it because that's part of their livelihood. So I get it, but it's like is that sharing culture or is it like where is that line? Because is that sharing culture?
I would say that this is more of a sharing culture. I will always determine how I judge it based on the power dynamics at play.
Okay.
BET feeling a need to snub black artists so that they could highlight a white artist that was already celebrated in white communities in order to enrich themselves is assimilation into whiteness. They felt a need to give white people accolades in order to like appeal to their better half.
To that audience.
Or better judgment. Mm-hmm. People sharing culture, like let's say Jamaica, for example, that's where I've been, where they offer to braid and I've seen them braid the white people's hair and do all the things. I remember when Adele got the backlash for the Bantu knots. but I see that kind of like when you go to an Indian wedding and you are asked to wear their cultural garment.
Yeah.
Like I see those moments as sharing because it is them inviting you in for the enrichment of them.
Right.
Like they chose to have you there. They chose to invite you into the culture in some ways.
Right. And I get that part because even when I like when I lived overseas, like when I would go, like I've been to Korea. So I went and got into like traditional Korean garb, like to garments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, walked around the temples. I did the same thing when I was in Japan. So like I get that. But I think that go ahead, Bo. Yeah.
I think like part of it is too about like how it's done. So like in the instance of like getting your hair braided, I doubt that I doubt that they're like giving, you know, insight or a background on the history
the
of
the
braids
context.
When they're doing Becky's hair. Like, whereas I know like if you go to an Indian wedding and like, you know, usually there's going to be like an Indian mom or an auntie who was going to like, okay, this is a sorry. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about what it means. Like, they are likely going to give you
that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if it's just for profit, I don't know if I necessarily would even consider that as being inviting to the culture.
Yeah,
it's a business transaction.
Interesting.
Essentially,
I think you still need the background in order to consider to be inviting someone into the culture.
Yeah. It's essentially like, it's almost a form of entertainment as well. Like, it just, it kind of it's like, this is just, oh, I just do that because it's just, you know, like, it's a form of like doing what everybody else is doing here, you know? And it's just like, but kind of the absent-mindedness of like the culture aesthetic of it and like what the meaning of it is.
I think
like we kind of, and the people who decide to do that in those places, like, I get it. They have to make money. So I ain't mad at it because they make money. Now listen, they make a whole bunch of coin from doing them people's hair because baby. Yes.
Oh yes.
You if you're talking about just from one ship, there being 1,300 people. And you talking about
I'll start braiding.
Listen, I was about to set up shop.
You can come to suite 213 and
oh, the braider.
But I saw it differently when I would go and I would see like the white people getting the braids, because there's kind of this assumption that they are just trying to participate in the moment. And that like, by the time we get back on the ship, by the time we get back on the plane, these braids will be taken down. They will not last the duration of the trip. It's more so like, hey, I'm about to do a quick little braid now. Really?
No, these folks will keep it for the baby.
You don't remember being in grade school and you would come back from spring break and Amanda would be like, we went to Jamaica and look at my braid.
It's
and
a it thing. Was like no, wrapped at the no, end.
Are you
I
serious?
Don't have that experience. Because keep in mind, again, Randy, they've paid money for this. Now, even if it's like $20, $25, whatever it is, they pay money for this. And again, I've literally had several guests be like, ooh, like I remember there was two young ladies. They were actually from, I think they were from Ukraine. They were somewhere in Europe. I'm almost certain that they were from Ukraine. And so they, while we were in, because they were not cast members, they played on the ship. They were musicians on the ship. And I remember us going to St. Lucia. So we were in St. Lucia and they got back on the ship with these braids and just was like, hey, look at my hair. Do you like it? And I'm just like, I have so many questions and concerns about it.
Like when Kim Kardashian like coined those braids and she like stole those braids and she was like, oh, and everybody's calling them like the Kim K, Bo Derek braids. And it's like, Kim K did not invent these fucking braids. Look that up real quick.
Bo Derek braids. What?
For context, Kim Kardashian went and got like some, I don't even know what kind of braids these are, but she went and got some braids that are like commonly found on Black people. And
they're
then
like lemonade braids.
Yeah.
Or what the girls would call lemonade braids.
Oh.
And then when she was asked about them, she was like, these are the Bo Derek braids and that kind of thing. I think when we run
who
into
is
stuff
Bo
like
Bo Derek.
I'm trying to understand that too. Who is you talking about like Lil Bo Derek? Like who is Bo
Y'all
Derek?
Y'all gotta look up Bo Derek with these braids.
I need to know Bo Derek.
Wait, is this white woman?
Is this a new name for Bo? So, Bo, is this your new name, Bo Derek?
Mm-mm. I don't know, Bo.
Bo the Derek? What?
No. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
I'm confused.
Who is this? Who is she?
But once again, it was, and that, I don't even know who she is. But the point is that Kim K labeled these braids as like the Bo Derek braids. You know what I mean? And if you type in hashtag Bo Derek braids on any social media, you are going to see a lot of white women with these braids. You are going to see like kind of the co-opting of culture, because it's like, y'all know these are not Bo Derek braids. Y'all know that these are like...
But then this is where white women will hit you with the, well, the Vikings wore braids.
So these... the way... but this is what I be talking about. This is exactly what I be meaning when they go over to... They go on over to the Caribbean and then they get these...
See, but this is how I separate. This is how I separate it. Kim K did this in the States. Adele, that picture of Adele with Bantu knots, you would have had to catch her the night that they were done in the moment where they were done.
Right.
Because yeah. she was just participating in a thing
right.
temporarily for the moment. Kim K went on to not only wear the style multiple times, she posted it, she created a name for it, she laid claim to it in a way that to me is problematic and appropriation of culture.
But she's
whereas we didn't necessarily see Adele do that. We seen her participate, and we can talk about yeah. if there is problem with people participating or not. But I think the way you participate in certain things does matter. Like we've all seen the movies where the white girls are doing each other's hair at the slumber party. I wouldn't care if white girls are sitting there playing at a sleepover and they do micros on each other. However, right. I don't want Please. You to be moving around the world saying, these are Bo Derek braids and doing yeah. all of this other stuff. But, like, it's important that you do understand the context.
But are we surprised by Kim K?
No.
Okay, because, no. I mean, she has a long history of
violence.
This. Like, very...
Not
yeah,
at all.
I don't even want to... okay. My God.
And I feel like when we talk about assimilation, it kind of goes into, like, who gets rewarded for doing these things? You know right. what I mean? Like, who yeah. actually has the ability to profit? Because I remember privilege. Back in the day, and I'm going to give one more example, but do y'all remember when Dr. Phil had the girl on that thought she was white?
Vaguely, but yes.
Okay. Well, I know y'all remember, what is it, Bad Baby or which one of those bad children?
Bad Barbie.
Whichever one it is, the one that comes from the Dr. Phil show.
So oh, White Girl, Bad Barbie?
Yeah. Dr. Phil did two segments that right. were opposite of each other. There was a black girl who believed that she was white, and there was a white girl
right.
who believed she was black. The white girl who believed she was black then ascended to all of this fame and right. all of this notoriety.
Was that her thing? Was that she no, believed she
you
was
know,
black?
It was, I don't know if... But
she was a bad was, kid.
It was because I know this, because it's the Catch Me Outside girl, right? Isn't that who
yeah.
that is? Right. So, but I don't
was,
know. Is that what the episode was about?
She was black.
Was mm-hmm. that what the episode? I think she had associated herself more so with like black culture, but like the like thugs and dating black guys. I think that was part of that conversation. But I don't.
She had a beef with her mama. That's right. what it was. She was a bad oh. kid, and it was like an episode about like children who were lashing out, acting
yeah.
out.
Right.
And she was like getting into it with her mama, so they came on there to like. Try right. and sort through that and get to like why she was misbehaving this way.
Okay, well, reverse.
but your point but still stands,
the,
though.
The juxtaposition, yeah. though, of those two episodes airing around the same time is that this black girl believing that she was white and maneuvering the world that way is not monetizable. Whereas mm-hmm. this white girl having this hood affectation, however, very much mm-hmm. is. She was able to ascend into fame and riches and wealth off of this like gimmick.
Right.
And this aesthetic mm-hmm. in yeah. a way that young black girls who did the same thing were never going to be able to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, that makes sense.
So it comes down to who can like monetize it, who can capitalize on whatever it is. Kim Kardashian can get a lot of attention for wearing braids because she's not black.
Right.
That's tough. It's like, but then what do I got to do? What do I need to do to get attention?
Lord. Be white and have the privilege or a platform.
Jesus. What do I need to do? Lord, these folks out here doing stuff that I be doing for free and they making all this money. That's crazy.
Or assimilate harder, which sounds so bad.
I can't do no more. I do enough in corporate trying to just, I don't really have to assimilate, but I do enough to where I got to be like, let me be mindful of how I'm going to say this because
yeah.
you could get your, you could get smacked up. You could. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Not you're not gonna get me to act up in this culture. You're not gonna have me acting up. Yeah. but
no, I feel you.
I'm done.
On that note, before we continue to act up, we're gonna take a break and stretch our legs, hydrate. You know the routine. Thanks for listening so far. We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome back, everybody. Y'all already know what time it is. It is my absolute favorite segment, Word on the Curb.
Word on the Curb.
Word on the Curb.
Word on the curb is Neo has the girl so sick after he does a L.A. promenade with a girl on each arm.
Not L.A.
Let's talk about it.
A promenade is wild. Okay, Bridgerton. All right.
Yes. Bridgerton has infected my spirit, oh God.
It's giving Sunday in the park with Neo.
But for more context, so Neo is, he's been spotted in LA by TMZ, which I have questions about, but he's been spotted in LA by TMZ with a girl on both arms, and he is talking about polygamy, and he is saying that people shouldn't judge and that it's okay to have two girlfriends, and it's just very...
It is, but why is Neo the spokesperson? How did we get here? Mm. Why not Jidenna? Janelle Monáe?
Ooh,
you know,
yes.
How do we end up with Neo, who has the history of not necessarily treating baby mamas right?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's part of his part. He's speaking for all the baby daddies. Is that what it is? He's trying to speak for all the baby daddies.
I mean, like, no, yes, bad. Like he's, this is just so bizarre. I mean, like,
it's wild.
Yeah, like, don't judge people for being non-monogamous. Fine, there's nothing wrong with being non-monogamous if all parties involved are consenting. Yada, 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 yada. Neo, girl.
And it's just like, right message, wrong messenger.
Right. I'm trying to figure out why. Like, this feels almost planted. Like, what?
It is.
I mean, it is. TMZ does not just show up. And they definitely are not just following Neo around.
That's what I'm saying. You know, like, I don't.
It's given performative, and he needs to be relevant for something again. And I think that's what it sounds like.
Besides the homophobia or transphobia.
He was like, well, he said no, because what he's trying to do is say, no, I'm part of the queer community too. See?
Non-monogamy is not queer.
We don't consider that part of the queer community.
Raymond, like, one of them letters don't stand for non-monogamy, the N.
I'm actually, please educate me.
No, I feel like if you're straight and non-monogamous, you're just
the reason why I am saying it that way is because when I think of the term queer, it means other than, right? Or different.
Oh, gotcha.
Than,
so you're using the,
like,
general queer term.
The
different.
General tier for queer in that sense. I'm not saying like that. Okay. They have to be like sexually queer, if that makes
sense.
Like
as an alternative saying, lifestyle queer.
Exactly. That's what I was saying. So yeah. Sorry for that.
If we just want to use the word queer.
I'm sorry. But I legit have always thought about it in that sense. I've always thought that non-monogamous was part of the queer community because it is not the, what we would consider as the traditional, if you will. So that's why I would always consider it like other or, you know, in that sense.
I typically apply it to sexual and gender orientation, not
versus like, interesting. Okay.
So I say the queer community and then I use queer as the term. Like the same as kind of how I do with like neurodivergence. Like there's like the neurodivergent community and then there's like, this is a divergent behavior.
Right.
So
but
I
even
like
if I say queer community, I'm still referring to those who are queer in gender or sexuality.
Mm. Yeah. Same. Mm. When I say community, that's what I'm referring to. But when I say queer, in the way that Ramus doing it, I'm talking about alternative lifestyles. Like, this is queer. This is alternative. This is different.
Right.
So if someone living off the grid is queer?
It could be. For someone, it could be.
That's funny.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess, I mean, like, because then my, well,
I also don't think that Neo would be doing anything publicly that others would consider queer of any type of
Well, but to me, I feel like, but I also, I don't know, like, I, and again, I don't follow Neo like that, but I find it interesting that he would want to talk about this. I don't know. To me, it's almost like wanting to, going back to the performative, it's very performative. So to me, it's like, is he trying to compensate or trying to overshadow something else? That's why I'm like, it's a, it's interesting because to me that's the standpoint that I'm taking it. Polygamy is fine. Like I love polygamy. Like where did that come from and why is it now just presenting itself? If that's something that you may have felt for a while, right? And not to say that everybody has their own time to have the discussions and want to share and disclose that, but it was just kind of, it's very interesting. It seems a little strategic. So that's why I'm like, do I believe it? No. But why is that the narrative that you want to now shape?
One of my favorite content creators online, shout out to Kimberly Foster, has a video called The Spectacle of Sexual Liberation. And in the video, she talks about this idea that she has questions for things when it looks like what society would deem attractive or society would fetishize. And I question that Neo came out with these two women because to me a little bit it's giving like my girl got a girlfriend. Like that's the energy right. that is giving that you are like walking LA with a girl on both arms. You've never said right. anything about polygamy. Like that we caught you like this and that TMZ would just be strategically waiting for you.
Nah, those
yeah.
days.
And where were you walking? Where were y'all going? Y'all just out for a stroll?
This is why I said it was a promenade.
Nah, it's his two good Judies, and they was out, and now he got to tell a story because he didn't want to know the truth.
But it just seems staged, and it seems like
it is very staged.
If you were actually interested in this type of relationship, this is not the way you would have displayed this.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the first way.
It seems like you know that black men everywhere are going to go up for you because you have two, quote, bad bitches. And that is dialogue around this predominantly. If you look at Neo's social media, it's like, oh, Neo got two fine women. If you saw them talk about it on The Breakfast Club, it's like, ooh, look at Neo thriving because he got a woman on each arm. How do y'all feel about that? And it's like the dialogue that we're getting around this is not helpful to the community that you are taking it from. This isn't doing anything for people who are or who actually practice polygamy. This is servicing just Neo.
Yeah, right. I'm not moved. That's why I'm like, I'm actually so upset that you are doing this.
Right.
It's never the people that you...
That you want.
It's never
to.
Who you want.
Yeah, it is just very disturbing. And I think once again, goes into that appropriation, who can play in culture, who can benefit. Neo can benefit from this because he is a black male superstar that is seen as having two women on his arms. And the women are being used as arm candy, trophies, prizes right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why he's being celebrated. He's being seen as like a player. It's not being seen as like, oh, this is a wholesome relationship and these people are all doing this and this and this. It's being seen as a hoe on each arm and look at Neo playing these women in their face. It's kind of how it's being depicted.
Yeah.
No.
It's just sad. Just a sad time.
No.
That's sad.
No. Well, it's always the ones you don't.
Word on the curb is Kaylin Allen is was dragged so hard on Twitter a couple of days ago. I just checked recently and it now appears that he has deactivated his Twitter account. So Kaylin Allen did a paid sponsorship partnership with Starbucks in order to promote Starbucks's new spicy refreshers. And in the ad, Kaylin does like a TikTok and he's like, you know, it's Kaylin, blah, 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 blah. And he's talking about how much he already loved the Starbucks refreshers drinks and now they have it in spicy. And he is, you know, he's selling the product, okay? He's in his, you know, commercial acting, you know, spokesperson bag. And Twitter did not receive it well. There were lots of comments about him juking and jiving for Starbucks. There was a lot of pushback because, you know, people are boycotting Starbucks right now. With everything going on with the act of genocide happening in Gaza. And it was very, and Kaylin is someone who's chronically online. So he knows about the boycotting of Starbucks. He knows that like in the sake of freeing Palestine, like we are not fucking with them right now. And you still did this for the check, for the money. And then other people had an issue with how he behaved in the commercial because it was a bit...
gay for pay?
Expressive. it was very much assimilation. It was very much going back to what we talked about. Like
gay for profit. Gay for profit. Interesting. I've not seen the commercial or the video, but
interesting. I thought I sent it in the group chat.
If you did, girl, I know I didn't see it. That's the truth.
The flowers were in the way.
Was it on Twitter?
So the actual commercial is like a TikTok. It's like a paid,
like a paid advertising
partnership.
Thing.
Yeah,
interesting.
But it was on Twitter as well. Like it made its way over.
See, now this is anytime this happens, I think it's very interesting. There is a Malcolm X speech called "The Ballot and the Bullet," where he talks about the fact that the Black community, we have a tendency to not distinctify enough who are performers and who are like activists. And sometimes we try to force performers into activism and activists into performing. And we should pay attention to the fact that those are two distinct groups.
Right.
And I think that the minute we do this, we'll do better. I think the minute we start to look at artists as people who can use their art to ally for things, and that they personally don't have to align, it's the art, right, versus Caitlin Allen, the activist, and we're expecting him to like stand in this all the way across the board. I do wish that he had either stayed silent on this or...
Yeah, because his statement, which I have, came out and said... Not it jumped away.
And I,
oh my God.
See?
And I, here we go. Look. He said, "Hey, y'all, before we jump into everything, let me be straight with you. I want to clarify that I do not shy away from critique. I have always viewed it as an opportunity to learn and reflect. I am fully aware of the feedback I have been receiving and have combed through all of it. And I'm committed to taking it very seriously. First, I need to own up. I haven't been vocal enough, even with the work I've done behind the scenes. Second, I had the choice to not say anything at all. However, I feel that silence would only show complacency and hypocrisy, especially since I've always emphasized accountability in others. It's only fair I do the same for myself. I know speaking up might not win everyone's trust back, but know that I will never argue or retaliate against valid critique. This isn't about winning approval. It's about staying true to myself and the values that I'm supposed to uphold. I will admit that I've played it too safe too many times, maybe because I thought I could avoid fighting every battle as someone who's often been on the margins fighting for my own life. But the facts are that I can't enjoy the perks of being in the public eye without also shouldering the real responsibilities that come with it, regardless of my reasonings, especially in today's social climate. That's unfair to me and the people I say I do this all for. I say this all to say I take full responsibility, and moving forward, I will push myself to actively step into the discomfort by being more mindful and accepting fully my duty to my platform, my audience, and even those who are not fans. To demonstrate my commitment, I will personally donate to two impactful organizations: World Central Kitchen, which provides fresh meals in response to humanitarian, climate, and community crisis, and Save the Children, which is dedicated to delivering humanitarian assistance to the children and families in Gaza around the clock. Sincerely, Caitlin." This post has been deleted, by the way.
So do we think that because he's going to be paying money into those organizations, is that enough?
Or? Well, that's what people were saying. People were like, well, some people... Because this did not make it better. And I will say, when you are the main character on Twitter, on Black Twitter, it is best to just lay low and be quiet. Yeah. At least for a while. Because no matter what you say, even if you do say
it's going to be dissected. It's going to be dissected and analyzed.
Can I read a reply that he got?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It says, as a queer Palestinian with family in Gaza, I want to suggest that you explicitly say what you're apologizing for, then publicly vocalize your support for the boycott, divestment, and sanction of Starbucks, and end to the Israel, the Israeli occupation of Palestine. I thought this was really, really, really interesting. I can see why he ran out to erase his social media. I can understand completely. I don't think he should have, considering what he said in a statement about, oh, I'm going to be accountable. It's easy to be accountable and then
run. Right. Yeah. And also, like, he likely is not, because of this partnership, there, he likely cannot come out now and be like, boycott Starbucks because of whatever deal XYZ, which is why it's like, you should have just said nothing, waited until the time passed, and then, or just say, fuck the Starbucks check, this ain't worth it, and do it anyway. But then you also risk your reputation.
Mm-hmm. Right. With working with brands, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot.
Right.
And this is why, if you are not going to be about it in some scenarios, you need to not say anything, because what's happening is the people are watching you through the internet and they are believing, oh, okay, you're about to march for the people, and then you go and take this check. Mm-hmm. And now your fans are pissed. And then if you go and you support the fans, then you're not going to get paid anymore. So you're in this weird situation. We saw this same thing happen to Jackie Ina, the mother of black makeup on YouTube, when she decided to name that candle Sorosoke. And it is like a Nigerian protest slogan.
Like a chant.
And they drug the hell out of her. They drug her all over the internet. Because once again, you are dabbling. And I think we just have to be aware. I think artists need to make a conscious choice to stay in the artist thing. This is why I love when Glorilla was on that news thing and they asked her. They asked her who she was voting for. And she said, I don't know nothing about none of that. I'm just having a good time. At the end of the day, the day's got to end. because she could have given us a conversation that was like hyper political and something that was like, oh, here, think about all of these things. But then if she messed up, we would have been right back here again.
Yeah.
So she gave y'all an unserious comment and stayed in the clear.
Seems like being unserious is the theme. Just be real unserious and everything will be okay. Just be as serious is what is given.
Do y'all think he deserves grace for this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is the first, like, and I think, again, to your point, like, he's somebody that is just kind of getting, he is kind of getting his, like, stardom, right? Like, I think there was a lot of things. Well, keep in mind, he also went through this whole, you know, the Ellen DeGeneres thing. So, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's kind of been laying low throughout, like, those aspects. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, it's like, for this to be something that is now something where he's being held accountable for his own actions, I think definitely deserves grace. Now, if he come back next month and it's something else, that is like, all right, girl, like, we gave you grace. I feel like people deserve grace at least once.
And I a little bit wonder, like, if he knew, you know what I mean? Like, if he knew that, hey, the people are going to be against this. Because I don't assume that Kayla Allen has a team.
No, he is chronically online. Like, anytime I am online, Kaylin is online. He definitely knows about the boycotting of Starbucks. That without a doubt, 100%, you cannot convince me that he had no idea that everyone was boycotting Starbucks. I do not believe that. I think he took a risk.
Okay, I calculate it. Yeah, okay. I can see that. I can 100% see that.
Maybe he was just trying to get it back, because how is he making money right now?
What I mean. I like took it. Like, I mean, he's in grad school right now at NYU, I think, for journalism.
Listen, New York expensive. He said, let me get this call.
It is. That's why I'm like, I think he took a risk. I think he was like, I need to pay my bills. As long as I give to these causes, I can like demonstrate that like I am trying to be better. I just think it may not have been the best move, but also people got it.
So I don't know. I think it's interesting, because it seems like Kaylin is getting a lot of heat, and I do think he deserves some heat for this, but there are like other things in like our communities that I feel like don't get as much heat. Like, in this situation, he is getting a lot of flack. But then we have, like, let's say when people perpetuate certain types of violence or other things, they don't get the same, like, dragging. And it's like almost like people were like looking for something to find on him. I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, Kaylin is not, you know, the best cement layer in all of the land. So.
Yeah. Shout out to Jill.
Okay. Okay, Auntie Jill. All right.
I caught that bow. That was good.
You.
But like looking at situations like this, isn't it, I don't know. I always wonder, because it's like we have a fairly big and growing platform now. Like, we have the potential to land in one of these situations. Like, how would y'all say that he should navigate?
I just would not have run it. If Starbucks called us tomorrow and was like, hey, Bo, we know you used to collect these cups. We're willing to give you, you know, a lifetime of free Starbucks cold cups. And we'll pay Black Inquiry X amount to do this app on your platform. I would say no.
Okay. Because I feel like some people have branded themselves as like tongue-in-cheek when it comes to advertisement. Like if you look at Fox Soul, they're very unserious with the way that they do advertisements. I think T.S. Madison does this as well, where it's like, okay, now I'm telling y'all to buy this, but like recognize I'm just getting a bag. Like it's kind of written into how they present the ad.
Right. I think you can do that with a lot of brands. I don't think you can do that when there's such a public, you know, and fair protest and critique of this company and the direct harm that they are causing. You know, it's like, come on.
Yeah. Damn, he picked one of the biggest ones to do it too. He
That's
picked
what like, I'm the saying.
Hyper visible like, corporation too.
I would not have done that. I'm like, I'm so sorry, I can't.
But give him a week, Neo would have broken up with his two girlfriends, and then he can reemerge on Twitter, and the world will have moved on a little bit.
Child, please. I hope he comes back to Twitter.
I'm sure he will. But this is smart marketing wise, because the more he stays on, it kind of just becomes a firestorm and it's just picking up more and more and more stuff. So if he removes himself, the inability to clap at him is going to stop a lot of people from clapping at all. And this will blow over.
Yeah. Mm. Well,
so I get it.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Black Inquiry. You can follow us on Instagram at Black Inquiry. Raymond, where can people find you?
You can find me at RayMondWise. Yes, it's Raymond Wise.
Randy Nigel, where can people follow you?
You can follow me at Randy Nigel. That's RandyNygel.
And you can find me at Bodabaddie, BodaBaddie. Thanks for listening. Y'all have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
My daughter thinks that she is a white person.
I know that I'm white.